Now, I'll just tell you right up front, I have planned to finish the chapter today, but if it gets late, I think I might, pull the plug on it. Is that what that means, pull the plug? I guess it depends on the context. Anyway, so if there's an abrupt stop in the middle, you'll know that it's so that we're not here for an hour and a half or longer. Although, I got nowhere to go, but that's okay. You're at the Olympics. It's the 440, the 440-yard dash, one complete time around one circuit around the track, and the runners are, doing this. And then they get down in the blocks, and the starter shoots the pistol and boom, they take off. There's, 6, 7, 8 of them, 10 of them, running as fast as they can. Everybody wants to win the race. And there's a couple that kind of pull out towards the front, and there's a couple that kind of are hanging back. And there's this one runner. It happens to be a gal, and she's one of those tall, skinny, she was built to run. But as she's running and as she's giving it her all, her feet kind of get tangled up, and boom, down she goes on the track. The other runners, kind of, noticing what's going on, without anybody saying a word, without any communication aside from maybe a look to one another, they all stop. They turn around and they go back and they help this one up, and they all then continue to run the race together. See, it's the Special Olympics. And those special people in the innocence and the naivete that is part of their infirmity, the nature of God shines through in their character. They all want to win the race, but it's even more important to them that they all finish the race. What shines through those special people is the same thing that shines through God's people. There is an integrity of character that sets believers apart from the world. So that, thou shalt not steal becomes a promise instead of a rule. When the power of God's Spirit comes upon you, when He takes up residence within you, lying, cheating, stealing, coveting, idolatry, and self-centered living all give way to the character of Christ. Honesty and integrity and other-centeredness becomes the norm. Convenience is no longer a consideration. Sacrifice seen as a privilege. Obligations become opportunities to share, and assignments become invitations to serve. See, we all want to win the race, and we all want to see each other finish the race, but even more important is that there be no spectators, that everyone get in the race. And so through the testimony of our lives, God draws people to Himself. Saul, the rabbi from Tarsus, hated Christians with a passion. He hated anyone who had anything to do with that dead handyman from Nazareth named Jesus. But then Saul met Jesus. He saw for himself that Jesus isn't dead. He's alive, and more alive than he ever imagined one could be. And when Jesus shared his life with Saul, Saul became more alive than he ever imagined he could be. So much so that he changed his name to Paul and surrendered his life to serve Jesus. Telling and teaching others about Jesus and leading them into the more than you can imagine life that Jesus offers. Paul was running the race to win by getting as many as he could in the race. And through Paul, thousands did, millions have entered into that life that Jesus offers. I venture to say that there's not one of us, not one believer in this room, maybe not one believer anywhere ever, who didn't become a believer as the fruit of Paul's ministry in one way or another. The Bible or a Bible teaching or a pamphlet or a book or a speaker or a radio broadcast or a personal one-on-one sharing of the things of God. I'll bet that we can all trace that back to the Apostle Paul. Now, among those who met Jesus through Paul were Timothy and Epaphroditus. Now, before we continue, Epaphroditus is the way that you've, if you've heard that name at all, that's probably how you've heard it. That's probably not the correct pronunciation. It's probably Epaphroditus. Epaphroditus. But, and I'm trying to train myself to say it the right way, but I don't want to get hung up on that. So if I say Epaphroditus, forgive me. I know not what I do, and we'll just try to keep it straight. So Timothy and Epaphroditus, two young men who experienced the changes that faith brings and the life that Jesus brings. They let go of the world and embraced the Spirit. They learned to see life from God's perspective and let Him set their priorities. They were men of integrity. They were characters with character. And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. In these last 12 verses of the second chapter of Philippians, Paul shares what is not just a high opinion of these two believers, but a description that ought to fit every believer. It's like one of those sketches that a police artist makes, you know, what, did he have a big nose? Did he have squinty eyes? You know, you're not drawing a picture of what you want the person to look like. You're drawing a picture of what the person does look like. And that's the picture that we're seeing here. Paul gives us a sketch of what a life changed by faith in Jesus looks like. And let's hope as we work through this passage that we recognize ourselves in the picture. Amen? Let's start reading in verse 19 of Philippians chapter 2. But I trust in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you shortly, that I also may be encouraged when I know your state, you know, your condition. For I have no one like-minded who will sincerely care for your state. For all seek their own, not the things which are of Christ Jesus. But you know his proven character, that as a son with his father, he served with me in the gospel. Therefore, I hope to send him at once, as soon as I see how it goes with me. But I trust in the Lord that I myself shall also come shortly. Yet I considered it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, I give up, my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier, but your messenger and the one who ministered to my need, since he was longing for you all and was distressed because you'd heard he was sick. For indeed he was sick, almost unto death. But God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I sent him the more eagerly, that when you see him again, you may rejoice, and I may be less sorrowful. Receive him, therefore, in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such men in esteem, because for the work of Christ he came close to death, not regarding his life, to supply what was lacking in your service toward me. Okay. The first character with character that we see in this passage is Timothy. I need to get a little background on Timothy. His name, Timothy, or Timotheus, Time means honoring, and Theos means God. Theos, T-H-E-O, like in theology, that's just the Greek form of God. So Timotheus, or Timothy, honoring God, or God honoring. Timothy's first mentioned in Acts chapter 16 when Paul, on his journeys, goes to Lystra. I'll read this to you, the first couple of verses from Acts 16. It says, "Then he," that's Paul, "came to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a certain Jewish woman who believed, but his father was Greek." Kind of implies he wasn't a believer. "He was well spoken of by the brethren who were at Lystra and Iconium." Timothy from Lystra. He's a companion of Paul, mentioned along with Silas and Luke as Paul is on his missionary journeys. Once he met Timothy and once Timothy joined that traveling party, you'll notice in a few of Paul's letters, it'll say Paul and Timothy. So he was possibly even the scribe that took dictation from Paul and wrote things down. But whatever the nature of his job was on the ministry team, he was there with Paul a lot, traveled with Paul a lot, was in there, was on a lot of missions. In fact, it was Timothy, we learned, that ever delivered that letter of 1 Corinthians to the church in Corinth. You know, Timothy was the messenger on that. Timothy, this is the same Timothy. Timpani? Where did that come from? This is the same Timothy that the letters of 1 and 2 Timothy are written to, those pastoral epistles. In fact, if you turn real quickly back to 2 Timothy, it's just a little ways back, and if you get to Hebrews, you've just gone a little too far. Hebrews is one of those major dividing books in the New Testament. 2 Timothy, right in the first chapter, Paul writes this: "I thank God, whom I serve with a pure conscience, as my forefathers did, as without ceasing I remember you in my prayers night and day." Okay, now he's talking to Timothy here. Remember that. "Greatly desiring to see you, being mindful of your tears, that I may be filled with joy." Apparently when they parted company, it was an emotional moment. "Filled with joy when I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded is in you also." So Timothy here is a third generation believer. His grandma was a believer. His mom was a believer. It's implied that his dad wasn't, and then finally Timothy himself hears the gospel, turns his life over to the Lord. Apparently, Timothy was kind of a timid guy, kind of a shy fella, and a little bit intimidated by older men. You know, he respected that the place of the wisdom of age and all that. And even though he was in a position to be a teacher and a leader and an evangelist, when the older men, the older people would disagree with him or question him, he had a tendency to just kind of withdraw and fold up, kind of like a flower, just kind of, you know, here he is with all this great teaching from that he learned from Paul. But then when someone would challenge that, he would, you know, it would kind of pour cold water on him. It says in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12, "Let no one despise your youth." Remember, this is Paul again writing words of wisdom to Timothy. "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Don't neglect the gift that is in you, which was given to you by prophecy with the laying on of the hands of the eldership. Meditate on these things. Give yourself entirely to them, that your progress may be evident to all. Take heed to yourself and to the doctrine. Continue in them. For in doing this, you'll save both yourself and those who hear you." And then in the first verse of the next chapter, "Do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father. Younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters." You know, he's instructing him here how to deal with these older men who would challenge or question or be less than cooperative. You know, it's hard to be a teacher from people who don't submit is too strong of a word. But, you know, they're not there to learn. They're there to teach the teacher. I remember there was a fella at the church I was in Vancouver, and it took me a while to figure this out, but he would come up with a question. What do you think about, you know, this? Did Jesus really ascend into hell for 3 days, or when he is, you know, or descend into hell? I mean, and when the Lord ascended, where did he really go? And where is he right now? And what is he doing? And he'd have these questions. Do you have to be baptized to be saved, or should I be baptized? Should I eat meat? Should I not eat meat? You know, do I have to quit smoking and drinking? Can I, you know, do I have to do this or not do that? And what I've learned after a couple of these was that he wasn't asking me to share with him what the Bible teaches about these topics. He was asking me so that he could tell me what he thought. And you run into those people, and it really is hard to teach them because it just kind of makes you wither up inside. Well, you know, and finally, in this case, I just told the guy one time, you don't want to learn what I have to say. You want to tell me what you have to say, and you know what? I'm not interested in what you have to say. Now, if you don't know what I want to say, that's okay too, but don't ask me. You know, don't bait me. Don't, what do they call that? Trolling, you know? Don't troll, hoping you'll get a bite and then you can share your opinion. Anyway, Timothy was just kind of intimidated by these older guys, and he tells him right there in the 12th verse, don't let them despise your youth. And then in the first verse of chapter 5, he says, now don't rebuke an older man. He's telling them how to handle them. Don't rebuke them, but exhort them, you know, encourage them, handle it well, because that was kind of a weakness in Timothy's character. It was his tendency to just kind of wither up and lose his confidence. And also, apparently, Timothy was a just kind of a, I don't know, puny. He was sick a lot. You know, he had a weak stomach. We know from 1 Timothy 5:23. Where Paul tells him, no longer drink only water, but use a little wine for your stomach's sake and your frequent infirmities. Now, don't take this and run with it as permission to be a drunk. Let's have a little wine, you know, for medicinal purposes, truly, which is, I think I used the medicinal purposes excuse for about 25 years myself, but, you know, I only smoke it for the taste. Not the effect, but that was the deal with Timothy. You know, so you kind of get a picture. He's a younger guy. He's kind of not well. He has trouble, and maybe he's one of those guys. Maybe the reason he didn't drink wine is because he thought that you know, thou shalt not, and so he stopped. And then it turns out that because of all of his other illnesses and infirmities, he just wasn't healthy, and he couldn't stand up to the challenges of the older people. And so, you know, that's just kind of the kind of guy he was in the flesh. But, you know, ultimately, Timothy, as we're going to see, becomes this hero, this character with character. And what I want us to see more than anything else is the bottom line is Timothy was who he was because of Jesus. Yeah, he was raised, you know, by a grandmother and a Jewish mom and a non-Jewish, non-believing dad. And his household probably had some turmoil when it came to religious discussions and things of faith and all the rest and, you know, sickly and just all his character. But ultimately, he would overcome all that, or he would at least deal with all that in the strength of the Lord. And he was who he was because of Jesus. We'll talk more about that in a minute. There are three words, I forgot to push the button, three words that describe Timothy. And the first one is exceptional. He was an exceptional individual. Verse 19, but I trust in the Lord. Twice Paul says that. I hope you IBS people notice that. Twice he uses the phrase, I trust in the Lord, which just means I am trusting the Lord, or by through trusting the Lord. You know, I trust to send Timothy to you shortly, that I also may be encouraged when I know your state. Timothy was going to go back to Philippi. Paul wanted to send Timothy to Philippi so that he could get the news back from Timothy about how great all the people in Philippi were doing. For I have no one like-minded. Now, stop for a minute. I have no one, not one. There's no one like-minded, such as Timothy, who will sincerely care for your state. See, that makes him an exceptional individual. No one like-minded in sincere care. Timothy stood out as an individual who genuinely cared for the condition of God's people. He didn't just do the job and go through the motions and you know, try to do what looked right or seemed right. He had a genuine heart concern for the welfare of God's people. Isn't it so easy to become hardened or insensitive to suffering? You know, you first time you see starving children on TV, you get out your checkbook and send some money. And then the upteenth time you see the starving children on TV, you just turn the channel. What can I do? And you get hardened to that stuff, you know, people in need. But Timothy wasn't that kind of a guy. He was like Paul, like-minded with Paul in that sincere care for God's people. He had empathy. You know, empathy is that quality of character where you hurt with those who are hurting. You're not just sorry for them. Oh, boy, bummer. You know, what? You know, your house burned down and your dog got hit by a car. Oh, too bad. You know, let's go to the ball game. No, it's when you empathy is when you feel what they feel, whether it's a good thing, you know, a negative thing or a positive thing. And that's what Timothy had. You know, that's what drove that empathy for the condition of people. That's what drove Jesus. That's what drove Paul. That's what drove Timothy. Does that drive you? Or have you turned the channel? Have you seen so much suffering that you just become hardened to it? And you're not, you know, you don't mean to be hard, but it just doesn't touch you anymore because you've seen. It's kind of like when you're the funeral director. You know, being around dead bodies just don't bother you because you deal with it every day. But, you know, I remember my first funeral that I ever officiated at was for a 13-year-old girl that had been hit by a drunk driver and killed. And we did the service in the chapel, and then it was time to go to the graveside for the rest of the service. And so I followed the funeral director, and you know, they loaded the coffin into the back of the hearse, and we got in the car, and he said, "Just a minute," and he got out and he went back in the office. And I'm sitting there going, "I'm in the car with a dead body." It's like, should I get out of the car? You know, do I cry? Do I freak out? You know, that's an unusual situation to be in. But the funeral guy, it was no big deal to him. Well, that's how we get with just, you know, there are folks that are believers that are lonely and hurting and need fellowship and support. And it may be something as simple as they need a jump because their battery's dead, or they need to get pulled out of the ditch because they slid off into the, you know, on the ice. Or, I mean, it doesn't have to be a giant thing. You're going to, you know, build them a new barn, which is okay too. But, you know, there's a tendency in our flesh to just lose that sensitivity and lose that empathy, you know. But I guess what happens is, you know, that the needs of our brothers and sisters in Christ for, you know, just fellowship and support and encouragement and love and forgiveness, rather than fire us up, sometimes it wears us down. But not Timothy. He was an individual of exceptional character. In verse 21, it tells us that there was no one else that Paul could count on besides Timothy. For all seek their own, not the things which are of Christ Jesus. You know, as you look through Paul's letters, and there are four prison epistles, and then there are the other letters that he wrote while he was on his journeys, and he mentions different people that are with him. And in one of the, and by prison epistle, it's as Philippians is. He's in that Mamertine prison, or at this point he's under house arrest, but in Rome, and mentioned among Paul's companions there in Rome during this time, along with Timothy and Epaphroditus, or Lucius and Jason and Sosipater. And doesn't matter if you know who those guys are, they're really only mentioned once. Paul calls them his fellow countrymen, which definitely means they were fellow Jews. It could even mean they were of the same tribe. That word countrymen can mean kinfolk. So not only in the Jewish family, but the tribe of Benjamin as well. And he mentions all these guys. He mentions in 2 Thessalonians that Silvanus is with him. And here he is saying that they all seek their own. You know, there's no one here with me. They all seek their own, not the things which are of Christ Jesus. You know, the fact that Timothy was the only one that shared Paul's concern makes him exceptional, but at the same time, isn't it a shame that that would be a rare quality among God's people? There's something in the church, not just this church, but the church in general, and I'm going to depart from the notes here and kind of follow where the Lord's leading me. And if it crashes, it's my fault, and if it's to hit, it's His. I see it, you know, I'm in communication with several other pastors, and they're in different churches all over the country, and they have different stuff going on and different celebrations and different struggles, and you know, just about every mindset. Some are so academic that going to their church is like going to seminary, and some are so kind of, you know, they're, it's like going to the church of Jethro Bodine. You know, they're so down, and you know, just playing cookies on the bottom shelf, plain bread. And I probably would rather go to Jethro's church than Poindexter's, you know. But there is what do I want to call it? A lack, an absence, I'll say, of proper focus, of right focus. There's focus on all kinds of stuff. There's focus on attendance, and there's focus on, you know, the money box, and there's focus on, you know, which book we're going to study through. You know, is it going to be a Navigator's book? Is it going to be a Chuck Smith book or whatever? And there's nothing wrong with that, you know, but there's all these focuses. But what I see is that there's next to no focus on what should be the one thing, the main thing, you know, the only thing, which is genuine fellowship. And that doesn't just mean we're friends and we know each other. And it doesn't just mean that you call me up in the middle of the night and, well, yeah, I'll come pull you out of the ditch because I'm the pastor and I kind of have, comes with the territory. You know, it's not that at all. It's like, what? You know, somebody's, you know, what was it? Wendy's in the hospital. You know, let's take her to dinner. Let's send her a card and flowers. Let's support her. Let's babysit her kids. I don't think anybody did that, did they? But she had family, so I'm not ragging on you about it. It was covered. But, you know, that's the idea. When there's a need known, if somebody's sick, man, you take care of them if there's nobody else to do it. If somebody has a need, you provide that need. If somebody gets bad news, you come around and you sit in their living room with a cup of coffee and you don't say a word. You just sit there and be with them. And Timothy was a guy who understood that. And that's what drove him. That's what motivated him. And I'm saying that it's a shame when that's an exceptional quality, because it ought to be an ordinary quality. And it's not something I say ought to be. It doesn't mean that, okay, now start really working on it, because it's all the fruit of the fellowship that you have, that I have with God. And if I don't have that connection and that fellowship, then everything else is just pretend. Everything else is just baloney, and it might look good from the outside and might even impress some people, but, you know, so what? If it's not the real thing. You know, Paul refers to Timothy here as a man with genuine faith. And it's that genuine faith that is the root cause of his empathy, his sympathy, his trustworthiness, and all the rest of the things that we're about to look at. Okay, I'm stepping back up to the notes with that off my chest. Here's the difference, and I kind of mentioned it. Timothy was the real deal when it came to recognizing, one, the enormity of God's grace in forgiving his sin. I mean, who am I? What makes me deserving? Well, nothing. And he understood that. The enormity of God's grace, the extent of Jesus' love in dying on the cross for his sin. And three, the empowering presence of the Spirit in his freedom from the power of sin. Those three things were ever before him. When he woke up in the morning, he didn't think, do the Blazers play tonight? Where are we, that project? You know, what's the first thought when you kind of open his eyes and sort of be aware that he's, oh yeah, you know, I'm Timothy, this is my life. What's the first thing? It was always this. It was always the enormity of God's grace, the extent of God's love, the empowering presence of the Spirit. Now, Timothy was no doubt an exceptional individual, but what drove him to be exceptional ought to be the experience of every ordinary believer. It starts with that vertical connection. We are invited to enjoy the fellowship with God that he enjoys with himself in the company of the Trinity. And God doesn't invite us to become a part of a religion. He invites us to come and be a part of a relationship, a fellowship. Come and enjoy what I enjoy. Jesus looks and says, you are going to like this. You're going to dig this. Come on, get in on this with me. And don't make a list of rules and start a new religion. Timothy, he got that. He was an exceptional individual. He was also an experienced individual. Verse 22, but you know his proven character, that as a son with his father, he served with me in the gospel. Experience, proven character. It means proven over time. You know, they had many travels, many adventures, many high points, many low points. They met people who loved them. They met people who hated them. They got ran out of town, you know, all but tarred and feathered. And Paul got stoned. They thought he was dead. You know, not that kind of stone. I mean, stoned to death. And they had left him for dead and say, good riddance. And then Paul, suddenly he was back. You know, he wasn't dead. Some say the Lord actually resuscitated him. I don't know about that. But Timothy was through all that stuff with him. You know, he went through all those experiences. Now, of course, at one time, Timothy had to be a rookie. You know, but compare Timothy to Mark. You know, young John Mark leaves Jerusalem. He lives, you know, his house with his mom is where the upper room was, where the, you know, the Last Supper and where the disciples were hiding out on the day of Pentecost and the Spirit came and all that happened. Just John Mark's house. And he gets hooked up with Paul and Barnabas, his uncle Barnabas, and they go take off on a trip and they just barely get, you know, they're on a ship, but they don't get far. And Mark goes, I'm out of here. This isn't what I signed up for. This is too hard. I don't, you know, I want to sleep in my own bed. I want to eat mom's cooking. I don't want to have, you know, I don't want to be stoned, you know, with rocks or thrown in jail or any of this stuff that Uncle Barnabas and Paul and Mark just bailed on them. But Timothy, he stuck, man. He didn't turn around and go back home. He didn't tuck tail. He stood tall and he just went with Paul. And Paul says, man, this guy, you know, has a proven character. He says he served me like a son, which speaks to the nature of their relationship, that father-son relationship. Now, I realize that you say father-son to a lot of fathers and sons, and that doesn't conjure up a pretty image. I realize that some of us had some lousy fathers and some of us have had lousy sons. I mean, that's the sad reality. But Paul here is talking in the most positive sense. You know, he served me like a son, served with me like a son. It speaks to a mutual trust and loyalty. I know my son's not going to cheat me. He's not going to rip me off. He might make a mistake now and then, but he knows I'll forgive him, so he's not going to try to cover his tracks with some kind of baloney. There's just this mutual trust, this mutual loyalty. There are shared values and shared goals. You know, we're in this together. And what's important to one is important to the other. And what we're trying to achieve is the same thing. We're working towards the same goal. There is in this relationship, he describes, a mutual respect and love. It's not a subservient, you know, slave master, you better do what I say or you're out of here kind of thing. No, with the loyalty and the trust and the respect and all that stuff, the values and the goals, you know, there's a respect and a love between them. I guess that's probably the main thing Paul has in mind. Like a son, like a father and son we serve together. I was so blessed here a couple years ago when my son, Corby, came and served with us here for the better part of a year. Lived right over here in what is now the preschool with his family. And it was number one, it was great for dad to have, you know, the grandkids right next door and all that. But I'm talking about working together. He was the associate pastor here, and he took care of, you know, the youth ministry for a season. He took care of all the computer stuff, which now then fell back on me. And I went, oh man, you know, I don't want to do this stuff, but somebody has to do it. And he just took care of, I mean, he changed light bulbs. He cleaned up messes, you know, that before I even knew. He was just the best assistant, associate pastor that you could be. And then compounded with the fact that he was my son. And there was a respect and a trust and a loyalty and common goals and common values. And all either of us wanted was what God wanted. And if that meant it was an easy street or a tough road to hoe, it didn't matter. We're in this for the long haul, nose to the grindstone, you know, get her done kind of a thing. That just was our attitude. And to have him as my partner, you know, not just, you could have a partner, but the fact that he was my son too, just made it a beautiful thing to be a part of. And I'll just tell you, the day that they loaded up the U-Haul and drove away, and I, you know, okay, God bless, see ya, hugged the grandkids. I went back in the house and I bawled like a baby. My heart broke. It hurts right now just thinking about it. Watching those, that my son and his wife and their kids, you know, down the highway, never to come back except for a visit. That's how Paul felt about Timothy. He was, because of their time together, because of the fact that he was an experienced individual. He was also an encouraging individual. Verse 23, this is kind of implied. He says, therefore, I hope to send him at once as soon as I see how it goes with me. He wanted to send him, but he didn't want to lose him. You know, because he was so encouraging to Paul. It was so encouraging having Timothy around that Paul didn't want to let him go. He needed him. I mean, he's chained to a Roman soldier. Now, I don't know if it's 24/7. They might have unhooked you long enough to go to sleep, but maybe not. You know, every waking moment for sure, there's him and this chain and this Roman soldier in full sort of, you know, what's that movie, that Russell Crowe movie? You know, this full gladiator garb, you know? I mean, with a sword, and a little sword, the Machaira, the dagger, the whole deal. And it was not fun. Now, he wasn't in the dungeon. He will be in a couple years, but he wasn't in the dungeon. But, you know, you can't go anywhere. And, you know, these soldiers could be a little cantankerous, and we'll see a little sort of a hint at that in a minute. But with Timothy there, he was such an encouragement. You know, some people are just that way. You know what I'm talking about? We're not talking about me. But some people just have the gift of encouragement. Remember in Acts, we read about a guy named Joseph who sold a piece of property, which I think was on Crete, if I remember right. And he took all the money from this property sale and gave it to the believers to just use as needed. And they started calling him the son of encouragement. That was his nickname, Barnabas. Uncle Mark's Uncle Barney. The son of encouragement. Barnabas just had that gift of encouragement, you know. And some people just do. I can think of a couple of guys that I know, and you know, there's a fella in Portland whose name is Tim, just by coincidence, who whenever Tim's around, he is just Mr. Positive Energy. Doesn't matter what's going on, he's a musician, and you can be at the worst gig in the world. You show up, and they forgot you were coming, and the stage is that big, and the power outlets don't work, and the bartender or the club owner is cranky, and before you even start, they tell you you're too loud, and they don't like your music, it's too fast, it's too slow, whatever it is, we don't like it. And then everybody else is going, you know, the fighter wants to go knock the guy out. Other guys want to give up, throw the stuff back in the car and get out of here, and Tim's just, oh, isn't this a great gig? No, it's not. What's wrong with you? But he's always like that. He's just on top of the world. You know, another guy that I've come to know who's like that, and you may know him by reputation, he's a Calvary Chapel pastor just outside of Boulder, Colorado. His name is Richie Furay. And if that name's familiar, because you're a music fan from the 60s, Richie was the singer, one of the singers in the band The Buffalo Springfield. There's something happening here. And he sings the harmony on that along with to Steve Stills. Later on, he was in a band called Poco, and then he was in a band called the Charlotte Human Furet Band. And then he got saved somewhere in there, and then he became a pastor. And I've seen Richie at a couple of pastor conferences, and we've emailed and talked on the phone. I'm trying to get him to come out here, which he agreed to do, but he's just never in the neighborhood, you know. But Richie is one of those guys like Tim who's just, you know, he wakes up in the middle of a hailstorm and says, what a beautiful day. What a great opportunity to be alive and serve the Lord and love my family. And you're going, shut up and go back to bed. It's dark and there's thunder and rain and it's miserable. Don't you get it? He's just, no, I don't. He's just, I don't. It's like the opposite of depression. You know, I tend towards depression. It's, oh, man, you know, but he's just the opposite of that. And Timothy apparently was one of those guys. And see, Timothy was the only one of all those that surrounded him that Paul could trust to build him up, not break him down. You ever been around those people who focus on the negative? It just drives me nuts. You know, there's some value to this, so I want to say it with a qualification. But when you, I know, I have an idea, and then there's always somebody in the crowd who comes up with 9 reasons why that can't work. And you go, man, I'm just had the idea. I'm just feeling good, and you're already raining on my parade. You know, come on. But now you need those people around you to keep things in check. But Timothy was not that way. Paul said, you know, Timothy, as he's chained to this Roman soldier, I'd like to write a letter to the folks in Philippi. And Timothy's got the, okay, go. You know? And he just, everything about him, and Paul might wake up, oh, my life is wasted. I've served the Lord, but now I'm in jail and I can't do anything. And Timothy would be the one to say, no, man, there are thousands that are believers because of your ministry, and I'll bet the Lord's going to get you out of this, just like he got you out of so many prisons and jails and even brought you back from what looked like death one time. Come on, Paul, you know, Lord, let's go. And he needed that. Paul needed that, and he was willing to let Timothy go, but he really was reluctant, and that's why he decided to send Epaphroditus. You know, I got to tell you, being burned in the ministry is just the worst. You know, when Paul says here, all seek their own. You know, he's talking about those guys that were with him, they've all abandoned me. They seek their own, not the things of God. And when you're trying to do God's work and there are one or two or a couple or however many of those people who are seeking their own as opposed to the things of God, it just, you know, it chaps your hide. You know what I mean? I mean, it makes you sad and kind of angry at the same time. Come on. Let's go. God's got a plan here. Let's do something. And you know, with all those guys around him saying, well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go down to Philippi. Not me. Send somebody else. I went last time. It's not my turn. And Paul, you know, just had to go, you jerks. You idiots, don't you get it? We have an opportunity to serve the Most High God, and you're looking at it like you've just got a bad assignment. Oh, I got to write a 500-page report, by tonight. Like, no, you guys. Timothy, exceptional, experienced, and encouraging. So next week, we will pick it up with Epaphroditus. I'll practice during the week. And we'll finish this up because there's a couple of similar character qualities that this young guy exhibited that again, Paul's not telling us here, and this, I'll wrap it up with this. Paul is not telling us these things to show us what our lives ought to be like. He's not setting a goal for us to achieve. He's painting a picture of what an average, everyday, ordinary, born-again believer in Jesus Christ will be all about. And it's not above and beyond any of us. It's really not. When we remember the fellowship of the Godhead that we've been invited to be a part of, and when we accept that invitation, and when we join in that fellowship, all of these character qualities and the fruit of the Spirit and all the rest, and honesty and integrity, the Ten Commandments, they aren't rules, they're promises. It's just the fruit of the thing. So let's close in prayer, and we'll pick it up next week.